Chapter 29. "Not much further," said Dennis Peterson. "No," Sean grunted. He was irritated at this statement of the obvious. When you come out of Mahoba's kloof and have the baboon stroom next to the road on your left hand, then it's 5 miles to Ladyburg. As Dennis had said, not much further. Dennis coughed in the dust. "That first beer is going to turn to steam in my throat. I think we can ride ahead now." Sean wiped at his face, smearing the dust. "Emby Janey and the other servants can bring them in the rest of the way." "I was going to suggest it." Dennis was obviously relieved. They had almost 1,000 head of cattle crowding the road ahead of them and raising dust for them to breathe. It had been 2 days' drive from Rourke's Drift, where the commander had disbanded. "We'll hold them in the sale pens tonight and send them out tomorrow morning. I'll tell Emby Janey." Sean clapped his heels into his horse and swung across to where the big Zulu trotted at the heels of the herd. A few minutes' talk, and then Sean signalled to Dennis. They circled out on each side of the herd and met again on the road ahead of it. "They've lost a bit of condition," grumbled Dennis, looking back. "Bound to," said Sean. "We've pushed them hard for 2 days." 1,000 head of cattle. 5 men's share of Setiweo's herds, Dennis and his father, Waite, Sean and Garrick, for even dead men drew a full share.
"How far ahead of the others do you reckon we are?" asked Dennis.
"Don't know," said Sean. It wasn't important, and any answer would be only a guess. A pointless question is just as irritating as obvious statement. It suddenly occurred to Sean that, but a few months previously, a question like that would have started a discussion, an argument that might have lasted half an hour. What did that mean? It meant that he had changed. Having answered his own question, Sean grinned sardonically.
"What are you laughing at?" asked Dennis.
"I was just thinking that a lot has changed in the last few months." "Yaw," said Dennis, and then silence except for the broken beat of their hooves.
"It's going to seem funny without Pa," Dennis said wistfully.
Mr. Peterson had been at his Sandalwana.
"It's going to seem funny just being Ma, the girls and me on the farm."
They didn't speak again for a while. They were thinking back across the brief months and the events that had changed their lives. Neither of them yet 20 years of age, but already head of his family, a holder of land and cattle, initiated into grief and a killer of men. Sean was older now, with new lines in his face, and the beard he wore was square and spade-shaped. They had ridden with the commandos who had burnt and plundered to avenge Isandlwana. At Alundi, they had sat their horses behind the ranks of Chelmsford's infantry in the hot sun, quietly waiting as Setiweo massed his impis and sent them across open ground to overwhelm the frail square of men. They had waited through the din of the regular unhurried volleys and watched the great black bull of Zulu tearing itself to shreds against the square. Then, at the end, the ranks of infantry had opened, and they had ridden out, 2,000 horsemen strong, to smash forever the power of the Zulu Empire. They had chased and hunted until the darkness had stopped them, and they had not kept score of the kill.
"There's the church steeple," said Dennis.
Sean came back slowly out of the past. They were at Ladyburg.
"Is your stepmother out at the Thunis Corral?" asked Dennis.
"No. She's moved into town, the cottage on Protea Street.
I suppose she doesn't want to be in the way now that Anna and Gary are married, said Dennis. Sean frowned quickly. How do you like old Gary getting Anna? Dennis chuckled and shook his head. I reckon you could have got 20-1 odds. He didn't have a chance. Sean's frown became a scowl. Gary had made him look such a damn fool. Sean hadn't finished with Anna. Have you heard from them yet? When are they coming home? The last we heard was from Peter Marriottsburg. They sent a wire to Ma just to say they were married. She got a couple of days before I arrived home from Miss Sandalwana. That was 2 months ago. As far as I know, we haven't heard since. I suppose Gary's so firmly set on the nest they'll have to prize him off with a crowbar. Dennis chuckled again, lewdly. Sean had a sudden and shockingly vivid mental picture of Gary on top of Anna. Her knees were up high, her head was thrown back, and her eyes were closed. She was making that little mewing sound. "Shut up, you dirty bastard," snarled Sean. Dennis blinked. "Sorry, I was only joking. Don't joke about my family. He's my brother." "And she was your girl, eh?" murmured Dennis. "Do you want a punch?" "Cool down, man. I was joking." "I don't like that kind of joke, see?" All right, cool down." "It's dirty, that's dirty talk." Sean was trying desperately to shut out the picture of Anna. She was in wild orgasm, her hands pleading at the small of Garrick's back. "Jesus, since when have you become a saint?" asked Dennis, and urging his horse into a gallop, drew ahead of Sean. He kept going along the main street towards the hotel. Sean considered calling him back, but finally let him go. Sean turned right into a shady side street. The cottage was the third house down. Wade had purchased it 3 years before as an investment. It was a charming little place set among trees in a small green garden with flowers, thatched, whitewashed, and surrounded by a wooden picket fence. Sean hitched his horse at the gate and went up the path. There were two women in the sitting room when he pushed the door open. They both stood up, surprise instantly becoming delight as they recognized him. It warmed him inside to see it. It's good to be welcome.
"Oh, Sean, we weren't expecting you."
Ada came quickly to him. He kissed her and saw that sorrow had left its marks on her. He felt vaguely guilty that Waite's death had not wrought so obvious a change in him. He held her away at arm's length. "You're beautiful," he said. She was thin. Her eyes were too big for her face, and the grief was in them like shadows in the forest. But she smiled and laughed at him.
"We thought you'd be back on Friday. I'm so glad you've come earlier."
Sean looked past Ada. "Hello, Strawberry Pie." She was hovering impatiently for his attention.
"Hello, Sean."
She flushed a little with his eyes on her, but she did not drop hers.
"You look older," she said,
hardly noticing the dust that caked his skin, powdered his hair and eyelashes and reddened his eyes. "You've just forgotten what I look like," he said, turning back to Ada.
"No, I'd never do that,"
whispered Audrey, so softly that neither of them heard her. She felt swollen up inside her chest.
"Sit down, Sean."
Ada led him to the big armchair across from the fireplace. There was a daguerreotype of Wait on the mantel.
"I'll get you a cup of tea."
"How about a beer, Ma?" Sean sank into the chair.
"Of course, I'll get it."
"No."
Audrey
flew across the room towards the kitchen.
"I'll get it."
"They're in the pantry, Audrey," Ada called after her. and then to Sean. She's such a sweet child.
Look again, Sean smiled. She's no child.
I wish Gary...
Ada cut herself short.
What do you wish?
Sean prompted her. She was quiet for a moment, wishing that Garrick could have found a girl like Audrey instead of...
Nothing,
she said to Sean, and came to sit near him.
Have you heard from Gary yet?
Asked Sean.
No, not yet. But Mr. Pye said he had a cheque come through the bank, cashed in Cape Town.
Cape Town? Sean raised a dusty eyebrow. Our boy's living life to the hilt.
Yes, said Ada, remembering the size of that cheque. He is.
Audrey came back into the room. She had a large bottle and a glass on a tray. She crossed to Sean's chair. Sean touched the bottle. It was cold.
Quickly, wench, Sean encouraged her. I'm dying of thirst.
The first glass emptied in three swallows. Audrey poured again, and with the replenished glass in his fist, Sean settled back comfortably in the chair.
Now, said Ada, tell us all about it.
In the warmth of their welcome, his muscles aching pleasantly, the glass in his hand, it was good to talk. He had not realized that there was so much to tell. At the first hint of slackening in his flow of speech, either Ada or Audrey was ready with a question to keep him going.
Oh, my goodness, gasped Audrey at last. It's nearly dark outside. I must go.
Sean, Ada stood up, will you see she gets home safely? They walked side by side in the half-darkness, under the flamboyance. They walked in silence until Audrey spoke.
Sean, were you in love with Anna?
She blurted out the question, and Sean experienced his standard reaction, quick anger. He opened his mouth to blast her, then checked. It was a nice question. Had he been in love with Anna? He thought about it now for the first time, phrasing the question with care that he might answer it with truth. He felt a sudden rush of relief, and he was smiling when he told her.
No, Strawberry Pie. No, I was never in love with Anna.
The tone of his voice was right. He wasn't lying. She walked on happily beside him.
Don't bother to come up to the house.
She noticed for the first time his stained and dirty clothing that might embarrass him in front of her parents. She wanted it to be right from the start.
I'll watch it till you get to your door, said Sean. I suppose you'll be going out to Thithunis Corral tomorrow, she asked.
First thing in the morning, Sean assured her. There's a hell of a lot of work to do.
But you'll be coming to the store.
Yes, said Sean, and the way he looked at her made her blush and hate her redhead skin which betrayed her so easily. She went quickly up the path and then stopped and looked back.
Sean, please don't call me Strawberry Pie any more.
Sean chuckled.
All right, Audrey, I'll try to remember.